This episode is brought to you by CBS All Access. If you don't already subscribe to CBS All Access, please use our affiliate link by going to talkthroughmedia.com/CBS. Using our affiliate link gives us a little credit, which helps us to keep bringing you great content. U.S. residents only.
Welcome to episode 57 of the Star Trek Discovery podcast. I'm Brian.
And I'm Ruthie.
And this morning we are ready to cover season 3, episode 10 of Star Trek Discovery, titled Terra Firma Part 2. But before we get started, we have additional feedback on last week's episode, season 3, episode 9, titled Terra Firma Part 1, so let's open hailing frequencies. All right. Of course, you may remember that we didn't get a voicemail from Fred from the Netherlands last week. Well, we have that very one this week, so here it is.
Hello, Brian and Ruthie, and all listeners to Talk Through Media. This is Fred from the Netherlands with some feedback for Star Trek Discovery, Season 3, Episode 9. In contrast to last week, I'm very late with my feedback this time. Here in Europe, we see it a day later anyhow. But I had a very busy week at work, which is actually a blessing because I realized that a lot of people have problems with their jobs in this difficult time. But now it's Saturday and already beyond Brian and Ruthie's deadline. I like this episode better than last week's, but, well, last week's was last week's. I don't know if I really like this Terran surrounding. It's interesting, but it's also, of course, quite creepy. A lot of very nice, shiny armors, you could say. Visual effects are very nice, but that's actually always in Star Trek Discovery. The man with the bowler and the newspaper was a little bit too awkward for me. When it proves to be a kind of dream or something like that, then I can imagine it, but if it's really something, let's say, real, it's very strange. I don't like how Saru treats Book, but on the other hand, it is in character, I think, for Saru. What I did like is how Georgiou, being in our world, our universe, according to her, you can't call it the Prime Universe because she regards her universe, the Terran Universe, as the Prime Universe, which I can understand, is that you notice that she has been, although she's always very tough, has been softened, especially if you see how she treats the servant Saru. And I think now even more so, although in the original situation, Burnham, so Terran Burnham, wanted to assassinate her because she was already soft. So now she's extra soft. It's like the good tissues you use for your COVID sneeze. So we always find her very tough and unlikable. But for Terran standard, she is actually a softie. Okay, that's all for now. Greetings, all the best, Fred from the Netherlands.
She's an extra softie. Well, thank you, Fred, for your voicemail. And I said, that's okay, because this past week I had a lot of challenges myself getting the episode out. Had to work a lot of the weekend and didn't even get to start editing until, I think, late Sunday night. So, and that, of course, caused my little cascade of when the episode's able to get out. So it took me a while, but anyway,
it happens sometimes. Life gets in the way.
Yeah,
adulting is hard.
Yeah. And you know, for the next, for like basically the rest of the season, we're gonna record Saturday morning instead of Friday night because, well, last night we had plans, and then the rest of the weeks we're going to be doing holidays. The holiday thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we figured we'd also give you a little more time on the finale since it's going to be quite a while since we can talk Star Trek again. So we're going to keep the deadline 6 a.m. Saturday morning for the rest of the season. So just so you guys know.
I mean, for the season finale, we might possibly make it even later. Like we might record Saturday night.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just
get your feedback in and
don't wait.
Yeah.
Just because we're extending the dead roll. Don't wait.
Yeah. Cause
do it early and often. Good times.
Yeah. It's a good point that, Fred, you make about how she was already soft for the Terran universe.
Yeah.
And, I mean, she had all those agonizers going. I had a lot of thoughts, when watching the episode this week, especially, I kept thinking about like Burnham talking about, you know, why don't you just kill me? And, you know, we saw how much Giorgio, you know, prior to being rescued, was using agonizers. Like she had basically all of Lorca's people in agonizers instead of killing them all. She just had them in agonizers, whereas in this episode, you know, she has Burnham kill them all. And I have certain things I want to bring up when we get to this week's episode about that. But nevertheless, she doesn't torture them. She just kills them. So I don't know. It seems like they rewrote some of what's going on since season one about how to behave in the Terran universe. Kill, kill, kill versus torture, torture, torture.
Well, I think that is a product of her change nature.
Yeah.
Not necessarily a rewrite or anything, just she's different now.
Yeah. Well, she's definitely different. Did you have anything else you wanted to bring up from Fred?
No, I don't think so.
I mean, we've had similar kind of thought about the mirror universe. We're not sure if we like it so much, especially you, Ruthie.
I don't like it.
Yeah.
I don't need to think about it. I don't really like it.
Yeah. I think I like it more than you do, but I have certain misgivings about it as well, especially after this episode. It seemed pretty enthusiastic about like thoughts about, oh, we could do a season or, you know, a show in the mirror universe, or we could do like a limited series or, you know, mini series about it. I don't know if I want to see that.
I think I've had enough. I don't think I'd like it.
Yeah.
I know I wouldn't like it.
Yeah. I think I've had enough after this episode. I don't need to go back there. So, I mean,
I think one or two episodes every so often in a season is fine, but
I could see in
an entire season is no.
I could see in Giorgio's new show, assuming, you know, she's arrived roughly in the same at the same point that she left the mirror universe originally. Mm-hmm. Her occasionally going back there, but at the same time, I don't want her to spend a lot of time over there. You know, I could see more other people coming across, but, you know, maybe
she already said she didn't want to go back there.
Right.
So,
yeah. 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 But I could see other people coming across. Like, so we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
Ironically, just popped up on my soundboard screen a tweet from Jason Isaacs.
Ha ha.
That is funny.
Where were you?
That's indeed. Yes. Yes. Okay, so that's it for Fred's voicemail. We will hear from him later on in the podcast. We've got some other feedback from Melanie from Ottawa. You want to read that one?
Sure. Where am I? Melanie says, sorry, my feedback is delayed. The show doesn't premiere until Friday, 9 p.m. Eastern in Canada.
I was surprised about this because I was sure that it's Thursday. Trek Yards, they always discuss the episode Thursday night, or at least their first impressions from, what's his name? Captain Foley. He does his first impressions Thursday night. So I don't know if that's...
Maybe he gets a... Like they screener.
There's two different ways that the episodes are released in Canada. One is through CTV Sci-Fi channel, and then the other is through Craved, which is their like streaming service, which I think is owned by Bell Media / CTV. So you can get it both ways. I don't know how he gets it, so I can't comment on that, but yeah, I thought that, like, and we used to hear from Mark from Ontario, Canada, Mark Decote, and he let me know early on before we started doing this season that we probably wouldn't hear from him because he's probably going to be behind all season. So, but I'd ask him about that. But I, unless this is new, I thought all the episodes came out on Thursday. So I don't know.
Melanie,
if you want to respond to that, great. And if you don't, well, I'll have to look it up for next week or something.
Well, in any case, this is why we have this section, because we understand that not everybody gets it at the exact same time.
Yes.
So.
And we'd love to hear from more European listeners, by the way. We've only been hearing from Fred this season, but we used to get other feedback from Europe. So, you know, send it on in.
Yeah.
Okay.
Give us your feedback. We want it.
Yep. This show is based on feedback, so.
Yeah. Okay. So she goes on to say her rating is 9.5 sideways glances. Her yes is, I love the mirror universe / alternate reality shows in any series. It's fun to see the actors playing different versions of themselves. This episode gives us a chance to see that Emperor Giorgio's evolution began even before she jumped into the Prime Universe. And I have to say, yes, I totally agree with that. She says, I'm reminded of the traitors in the Skolian saga, where the plot line depends on the theory that even inherently evil human cultures / strains can eventually learn compassion if they live long enough, which is difficult in their universe. Then they depend on their years of experience to hide the compassion in order to survive. You'll have to tell us what this Skolian saga is. Is it a book? Seems like it's probably a book.
Sounds like it.
She says, no. The awkward scene between Stamets and Adira. I like the idea that Stamets and Colbert may get the chance to be father figures to Adira. Colbert said in a previous episode, if I had time, I'd have children. However, we don't need a scene showing this relationship developing in every single episode. I can understand that. It sometimes does seem like they sort of are pointing to it a lot, I guess.
Yeah.
Kind of, which seems unnecessary. Like, yes, we know. Thanks. But I understand what you're saying. Okay. And then she has a Hold Your Horses, which is the convenient portal sending Giorgio back to the time and place she regretted the most is moving us from science fiction to fantasy. I'm not sure if she really traveled there or this is in her head. Well, I can tell you it was in her head, sort of. I mean, it was kind of in her head, but at the same time, it happened.
Yeah, I mean, I got the impression from Carl.
Carl!
Yeah, I don't have that as a sound effect. Last week when I did that, I played it directly from Netflix, so I don't have it as a little thing. But anyway, with Carl, I got the impression that it actually created another mirror universe, like a
pocket universe is what I would say.
Well, yeah, but almost like the Kelvin timeline. This is more like the Carl timeline.
The Pocket Carl universe timeline.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
Jeff, X-Force 11 is next. He had a little tweet for us. He says, after watching every episode of CSI and loving it, it was so good to see Brass, Paul Guilfoyle, on hashtag Star Trek Discovery. I'm very interested to see who his character is. Is he Q? Well, we know, of course, that he's not a Q. He is...
What are you?
I am the Guardian of Forever.
I may play that a lot this week. And all the clues were there. So, and I said that I only watched it once at the time that we recorded. Well, I've since seen it several more times, and the clues were all there. It's like, why didn't I raise my hand up and say that is definitely the Guardian of Forever? I guess there were so many clues that suggested it wasn't that it threw me off a little bit, but yeah, the newspaper and all that, it was all there. It was all there.
Mm-hmm. Yep. All right. Next is a portion of a conversation from Ken from Chicago, I guess. I have no idea how this relates to anything, but he tells us he forgot to mention the reason Burnham showed up by Georgiou's bedside last week was because she's her best and arguably only friend. Did we say something about that or ask why she showed up, or was he just remembering something he wanted to say?
I think the latter.
Okay, because I was like, I don't know why he's telling. Okay, so this is an addendum to a previous feedback.
Yeah.
Colbert allowed her so close so Michael could deflect some of Philippa's ire, or medbays have no curtains in hashtag Starfleet. That's funny. That seems likely.
Next is some feedback that we got on last week's podcast directed at Ruthie. From Wes from Minnesota, he says, Ruthie asked, how does it feel to be in my 30s? Here's my answer, Ruthie. Ask me in 6 months. The reason why I say that is because it hasn't fully sunk in yet, as I have only been 31 for 2 weeks as of this writing. By June 2021, I'll fully feel like I'm in my 30s.
My response to that is, haven't you been 30 for a year?
Well, maybe he thought of it much like I did, where I kind of kidded myself. And after the initial shock of turning 30, I rationalized it and said, well, you know, I'm almost 29.
Well, you can't do that.
Yeah. So,
that's
so
not how it works.
I'm guessing, Wes, you spent a year of denial. And only when you turned 31 did it hit you like a freight train, because that's kind of like it was with me. Because like you, Ruthie, I didn't mention this last week, but I should have. I spent that year of turning 30 around a lot of people in their 20s, but
yeah.
I did have one friend who was actually sharing my birthday with me. He and I went to school together, and we had the same birthday. And
all right.
Yeah. So we kind of went out together that night and kind of shared that together. But our friends from school were all in their 20s, and we were 30. So that's when we went back to school. Then he continues, oh, and Brian, my friend, thank you for the humor of saying I would be old enough to be your son. And I should say, I am old enough to be your father, because I'll be 54 in a few weeks. So I needed that. December 17th was stressful for me. And so I thank you. Yes, it was stressful for me as well. So
I understand. Because I think, as Brian and I both expressed last week, turning 30 was worse than turning 40. And Brian said worse than turning 50. So,
yeah. Recently my wife turned 50 and it was no big deal for her either. So In fact, I would say her 49th birthday was far worse than her 50th because she broke her ankle on her 49th birthday.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
All right. So smooth sailing from here on out for birthdays, it sounds like.
Well,
unless you're stressed out for other reasons.
Yeah. All right. So let's continue on to this week's episode, season 3, episode 10, Terra Firma Part 2. We've got some weird credits, something I've never seen before in writing. I'm not talking about the actual visual credits, because we'll talk about that in a bit. The teleplay is by Kalinda Vasquez. And then normally it would say story by, but it said written by. And I'm wondering if this is a mistake. And often they, in the past, they have changed the credits, you know, later in the week. So maybe this will get fixed. But at least when I saw it yesterday and Thursday, it said written by Bo Young Kim and Erica Lapolt and Alan McElroy. So maybe, or McElroy, it may be story by there. I don't know. But the only people that would really care would be the Writers Guild of America. Or if you're a writer, but I, of course, watch these things because I wanted to play a writer. But other than my one sold story idea, I never got very far. Directed by, and I don't believe she has ever directed an episode of Discovery or any of the other shows, Chloe Domont. Didn't get a chance to look her up. Kalinda Vasquez actually used to work on Fear the Walking Dead, so I recognize that name, and she is now a consulting producer. The description from CBS.com is as follows. Giorgio uncovers the true depths of the plot against her, leading her to a revelation about how deeply her time on the USS Discovery truly changed her. We don't get a star date. The air date in Pacific time, at least when I saw that was available, was at 11:14 p.m. Pacific time. It was probably available sooner, December 16th, 2020. So essentially 2-something a.m. December 17th. It had a runtime of 49 minutes and 34 seconds. So Ruthie, if you had to give a rating, what would you give Terra Firma Part 2?
I am increasing my rating from last week to a 9 out of 10.
What did you
Something give, quippy.
What did you give it last week before? Was it 8.5?
I'm pretty sure it was an 8.9 or 8 oh, point okay. something. I don't know. It was not a 9, but now I'm making it a 9. And I'm doing it for sentimental reasons, not because I really enjoyed particular. I just don't really care for the Mirror Universe stuff.
So they're it's an arbitrary 9?
An arbitrary 9, more or less. It's an they're too mustache twirly, too one note, one dimensional. I don't find them all that like great. A lot of people do. I don't.
All right, so it's 9 across the board for both.
No, last okay. week had whatever last week's rating was. This week has a 9.
Oh, okay. All right, so I have to rate last week and this week, as you recall, because I was too chicken poop to to rate last week. I just was so messed up that I couldn't give it a rating. And that feeling subsided somewhat after watching it again. But after seeing this episode and putting it into more context, I am going to give last week 9.5 backdoor pilots. That's how I think you should treat these two episodes. And I'm simply going to say 9.5 for this week's episode.
What are you?
I am the Guardian of Forever.
9.5, I am the Guardian of Forever. So I meant to get the new version with Carl chiming in and creating a harmony. But I just got the original. So, all right. So we have some listener ratings. Ruthie, why don't you start it off?
All right. Jim from SoCal says 8.9 out of 10.
And your fellow Southern California listener, Will from SoCal says, I rate this week's episode a perfect 10, a perfect send-off for a redeemed and compassionate Philippa Giorgio.
All right. Jeff X-Force 11 says 8.5 Captain Brass upgrades to Guardian.
Mike from Arizona says, I give this episode 10 out of 10 because Jet's back. And she brought candy.
Wes from Minnesota says, this episode went off the rails a little. I still enjoyed it. I give Terra Firma Part 2 9.25 bowls of fireflies out of 10.
Yeah, and Wes, I agree with you on the off the rails a little bit, and I'll get more into that in my nose because I felt that this episode was fantastic, but it suffered from one kind of tremendous flaw. And I will get into that in the nose, but it, strangely enough, not a single person mentioned this in their feedback. So Edwin from Arizona just gives it a simple 8.5.
Rick from Cleveland says, what a great episode. I rate it 9.9. Star Trek gave me the Guardian of Forever for Christmas this year out of 10. This really was a near perfect episode.
LT from NC says, I'm giving this one a 9.1 out of 10. Carl's big voice.
Brian from Colorado says, this episode gets an enthusiastic 10 from me. It embodied Star Trek optimism at its best, showing that anyone, even the Terran Emperor, is redeemable.
And then finally, we have Comic Geek Kev, who got his feedback in just before our extended deadline. He says, I'm giving this one 9 out of 10. This could have been one longer episode complaints. I'm glad we got the story and that Michelle Yeoh got a proper send-off, but the placement and amount of time taken compared to the rest of the season just bugs me. But it is a minor one, but to be sure, microscopic. I agree with you, Kev, on this. I couldn't say it enough. I said it last week, when you got this yesterday. It suffered from where it was in the season, and I would have much rather have gotten it as maybe a single episode or something like that. Especially with this week, you know, the plot for the burn took very much a backseat. It was hardly covered at all. So I totally agree with you on this one. So, all right. So let's move on and get to our yeses.
Yes! Ah! Ah! Mike from Arizona says, this episode was a very good way to bring an end to Philippa's Emperor arc. The death scene between her and Michael was a fitting approach to achieve her character's redemption. She had to accept her limitations and learn to let go. I teared up during the Michael and Philippa final scene. There was something poignant about the Vulcan and Terran salutes they gave each other, and when the Discovery crew were toasting her. And now we know how Philippa goes back in time, setting the stage to return to Section 31. It would be very interesting if she plays a role in the Temporal Wars and shows up in the same time period as Picard. I would love to see Giorgio match wits with Picard.
Interesting.
I agree about the poignant respective salutes that they gave each other. That was definitely a yes for me. It felt very appropriate, I guess, mm-hmm. the way that they each saluted in the way that they knew best.
Yeah.
He goes on to say, and I would say, I don't think I want to see Picard and Giorgio together. Mm. Not Picard now, anyway. And we can't go back in time. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
I think that ship has sailed for me. Okay, tying in the Guardian of Forever was a nice touch, especially incorporating the effect of the Temporal Wars and the Prime and Mirror Universes. I wonder if he/it will play a significant role in the Section 31 series. Interesting. Then he goes on to say, did I mention that Jet's back? And now we know she's chief of engineering. It was too short of an appearance, though. I hope she has more screen time in the next episode.
If they go back to you know, like the TOS time period. It would, I guess it would depend on whether it's before we see it in season one of TOS or after, because I can't see them going to the Guardian Forever before, because it's very much a surprise when they go there. And I can't really see Section 31 going there. I don't know. It's possible, but
I honestly don't know why people think she would go back to the TNG time period.
Yeah.
It seems like from everything that's been going on, they've been whispering about this Section 31 show, Black Badge, whatever. It seems like she's going to go back to that time frame, that time period, and so that she can be back in the Black Badge division with Ash Tyler.
Yeah.
Hello.
Yeah.
People.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I would expect. Shahzad Latif and Michelle Yeoh basically setting up Section 31, and you know, maybe get occasional things from you know, Laurel and the Klingon Empire, and that seems built in, and maybe even, you know, occasionally getting a crossover with the Enterprise. I can see that. I don't really see things working so well if she goes to a different time period.
I don't know. I feel like I read that a lot in our feedback, so maybe I'm getting ahead of myself, but I'm like, I don't think that's going to happen. Let me just say it now. Sorry, guys. I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah.
I don't know why she would go back to a different time period than the one that she just came from.
I mean, think about it for a second here. At the end of season two, we see Tyler and then Pike, number one, and Spock all get interviewed about what happened with Discovery. But that doesn't mean that's everyone that got interviewed. So maybe Philippa ends up in the same time period, you know, roughly at the same point where she left it and is there, and they know about it, and she gets interviewed. We just didn't see it, right? So that's how I'm taking it.
Could be, but also I would add to that, stated in the first episode of this two-part series, what's his face? Glasses said,
glasses.
You can't, your atoms are designed to be in the time and place that they were created in.
Yes.
So if you jump forward and sideways, then that's why she's basically pulling apart. So if she didn't go back all the way back to where she had no problems, like, think about it. Like, even a jump, I feel like any jump forward would still be catastrophic for her.
Yeah, even, you know, days.
Even a jump, 100 years jump would still be not good. So I don't know why people are trying to put her in a different timeline, because that would not, she would ultimately be again in the same situation that she was in. I mean, probably maybe not as bad, because 930 years is a lot more than 130 or whatever, but I don't know. So I just, let's think about this logically. She's probably going back to the time that she left people.
I did not pick up on the fact that she was chief of engineering. When was that said?
I don't know.
I have to go back and check that. Like, there was a joke about, you know, where have you been?
I like that.
Yeah. All right. Next is Wes from Minnesota. He says, the interaction between Mir, Saru, and Georgiou, it was beautifully.
It was so beautiful.
I guess I'll leave that in. It was beautifully acted. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed that a lot. Also,
me too.
Yeah, it was unexpected as well.
It was unexpected for her too, which is part of why I liked it.
Yeah, yeah, and for him, and of course, him reaching his Vaharai.
Vaharai. Vaharai.
I almost gave it another syllable there. Vaharai. Also, the goodbye scene with Michael and Giorgio. Well, I don't. Okay. I was thinking that, yeah, the other one, that good. That, I wouldn't call it goodbye.
I mean, it was kind of goodbye.
Good die, maybe? Anyway.
Ooh, dad jokes.
The goodbye scene with Michael and Giorgio, that was great. For once, Discovery's writers knew to pull on the heartstrings here. We've gotten to know Giorgio for three seasons, and now this emotional moment was earned. Finally,
I agree.
Carl is...
I am the guardian of forever.
Yes, Carl is the guardian of forever. I kind of suspected it would be used again in Star Trek after the death of Harlan Ellison, the writer of The City on the Edge of Forever, who passed away in 2018. Ah, that's a good point. I even enjoyed the reveal, even using the original actor's voice to announce who he was. Yes, I love this. I loved how they did this. I love how the Adirondack chair kind of blew up and splintered and turned into the portal. So
I thought that was the door.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I guess it was the door. Yeah, you're right. It was the door. But yes, I loved how that effect, and I love the upgraded portal, because I did take a little bit of a look at that episode, particularly when I grabbed that soundbite from it. And in the original episode, it was basically just smoke or dry ice coming from the thing. So it wasn't it wasn't quite as visually appealing, but in this episode, it was much more visually appealing. So anyway, yeah, I loved.
Well, there's only so much you can do in 1960 something.
Yeah. Yep. That came out about maybe 2 months after I was born. So yes. I was born during season one, so.
Nice. I was born a year before Star Wars came out.
Ah.
Just so we can both date ourselves.
Yeah, it's funny. I know a lot of people that were born in the same year as you. I don't know why, so.
It's because the bicentennial year was a great year.
Seems like a lot of people were busy that year.
I guess.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, or the year before, because, you know, yeah. 9 months.
Yeah, true. All right, that's it for Wes.
All right, next we have Rick from Cleveland, who says, I thought last week, before we even saw the doorway, that we could see the Guardian. By the end of part one, I wasn't sure, but the reveal was spectacular. A huge yes.
Yeah, and like I said, I was like, why did I doubt this? After watching it, especially in watching this week, because I was pretty much convinced that it was the Guardian of Forever after multiple watchings. But, and then, like, part of my issue, I think, was when I watched it, I can't remember for sure, but I think I watched it on my phone. So I only watched it the one time, and maybe on my phone. It might have been on my tablet, but either way, not a big enough screen. So I didn't get a chance to really look at that newspaper. And of course, people out there have dissected that newspaper. And I should probably point to something about that newspaper. But it had all kind of stuff about like the 21st Street mission, where the Joan Collins character was. What was her name in that? I can't think of it right now, but anyway, that's where, you know, most of the episode was based on, and there was stuff about Let Me Help, which was...
You're talking about the original series episode.
The original series episode, yes. And there were other things in there too, you know, mentioned the T'Khan Empire, but most of the stuff mentioned the Guardian of Forever, or something about the City on the Edge of Forever episode, so... And I also mentioned there was also an article about Worf winning the Bat'leth tournament. So that was another kind of tie-in, you know, because that's from Parallels. So it was kind of like a parallel universe kind of thing. So really,
that was one of my favorite episodes of The Next Generation.
Yeah, I love that one too.
All right, going on. Yes, for Mirror Universe right scenes. Every one of them was incredible. And the Kelpians coming to help fight in the final shootout. What a ride. I'm just not sure that I bought into the Kelpians being like, all right, after they've been killed and eaten so many times, just them just being completely okay. Like, just, I don't know. To me, I feel like you're siding with your oppressors. That's how I felt.
I think the only way that you can take that to mean something is by realizing that Saru realized that she wasn't from there. Like, somehow, and, you know, we...
But she was from there.
Yes, but, I mean, she didn't come from there, so...
But she did, though. She just spent time somewhere else that affected her.
True, true. But in any case, Saru somehow knew that she had changed or was otherwise different. So
I guess I just didn't really buy into it that much. I was like, I mean, you save one Kelpian and suddenly they're your best friends.
Yeah, true enough.
Seemed sort of like
flimsy.
Yeah, that's a good word for it. It seemed sort of flimsy. Like, I can understand Saru being there, but the rest of them, I'm like, I don't know about that. Anyway, that's just kind of, I was like, All right. Finally, he goes on to say, yes, for showing us the true changes Philippa experienced in her time in the Prime Universe. We, the viewer, have seen her as the badass emperor who all this time was hard to trust. I didn't really realize just how much she had changed until she had to deal with the brutality her former self had instilled in Mirror Michael. Yes, for Jet Reno. It's not food, it's an accessory. Honestly, anytime she's on is just a treat. This week, she made a great episode even better. I had that quote too. This isn't food, it's candy. Like, that's how I feel about candy. Oh my goodness. Good times.
Yeah, and I think that was licorice, right?
It was. It looked like black licorice.
Yeah. Some people don't like black licorice. I am not one of those people.
I think I have to be in the right mood. I'm not overly fond. There, too much anise is kind of...
Yeah.
So, yeah.
All right. Next is our good friend LT from NC. And he says, props to Sonequa for pulling off the crazy so well. That look in her eyes was just so intense. I say amen to that 100%. She did look just like crazy.
She did look crazy.
Yeah. Props to Mary Wiseman for as much as how they use her prime character as a comedic foil and at times. Captain Killy sure made me appreciate her performance in the series a lot more. Yeah. She took great relish in torture. So,
yes. Great delight.
Yes. The sad goodbye scene at the portal. This neatly wrapped up the Georgiou arc for the series and left the door open for her reappearance later. And of course, they didn't show where she went to, obviously, because that is something that they'll cover in the next show. And I was kind of expecting CBS to announce what the next show was yesterday, but I didn't see anything that they did. So
she pretty much all but confirmed it, though, on the Ready Room.
Yes, she did.
When she said, Georgiou isn't out.
Yes.
Or we haven't seen the last of her, I think, is basically what she said. So
she said she's never going away. So, yeah, in other words, this is a character that Michelle Yeoh wants to play for a long time. And I can see why. Originally, I thought, well, you know, I could see her wanting to do movies and stuff like that and, you know, not committing to it long term. But I think it's, and yeah, she's got a ton of stuff going on. But she's always going to come back to this character because it's so much fun to play. And even if she is in Section 31, just playing that version, you know, and a slightly, you know, more dimensional version of her back in this universe, I think she enjoys that as well. So,
yeah, she's a pretty delicious character.
Yeah.
Multifaceted. Lots of dimensions. She's like an onion. She's got layers.
Carl's explanation of why he was in the middle of the tundra. Well played, writers. And I think what you mean by that is like why he was at this planet. Why they
hiding out there.
Yeah, he's hiding out. And it made me think about this. Like, you know, so various factions were using the Guardian of Forever and intentionally messing up time, you know, changing things. And I hadn't really thought of it that way, that they would be using the Guardian of Forever. I imagine that that was one way among many that they were going back in time. But nevertheless, talk about what a mess it must have made things. And how would they possibly fix that? Could they fix that? And how did they fix that? I mean, it may be so confusing that we'll never see it in a Star Trek series, because you could have Star Trek, Doctor Who. So,
yeah.
I know that there is a comic book that has both Star Trek and Doctor Who in it. So,
seriously?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
I think it would be really hard to write, but it can obviously be done because What's-His-Face did it with 12 Monkeys so well. The guy
who's, Terry Matalas?
Yes, that guy. I was going to say the guy who's now going to do Star Trek Picard, which yes. gives me hope for the next season of Star Trek Picard.
Yes, I agree. He is quite good. That is a show that I kind of, not yet. I've mentioned this before. Any show that is on an NBC Universal, like USA or Sci-Fi Channel, they did this thing where they'd only make the last five available. So if you got five behind, it would make it very difficult to go back and get caught up. And that happened with 12 Monkeys, and it happened with Mr. Robot, where I just never got caught up again. I'll go back at some point and watch those, but I think I have to go back. Do I have to go back to Peacock and see them at this point? I don't know. Mr. Robot may be on Amazon Prime. I haven't gone back to look at that. If it is on Amazon Prime, I'll go watch that. I have a long list of things that I need to watch, and I just watched The Stand last night, the first episode of The Stand. So that looks like it's going to be interesting. That's, of course, on CBS All Access, which you can get by going to talkthroughmedia.com/CBS.
All right, then.
Anyway.
Nice little plug.
Yep. All right, next.
All right, next we have Brian from Colorado.
What are you?
I am the Guardian of Forever. I am the Guardian of Forever.
That's right. He was so excited, he said it two times. Need I say more? I really liked the opening credits being reversed up, down, and color-wise.
Yes, the opening credits. I enjoyed this as well. I had this down in my yeses. And I thought that, it's like, as soon as I saw it, I'm like, that's interesting. Because it was literally, it wasn't just, you know, like a mirror, it was a negative. So they had like the color that we saw, which was like a bluish, that's like the reverse color of that, you know, very light tan, sort of like weathered paper look that they have for the opening credits. So yeah, the only thing that wasn't mirrored were the credits themselves, like the credits of the people. Those were colorized negative, but they weren't in reverse, because of course nobody wants to see their names in reverse. But yeah, their placement and all that were completely like mirrored and colored. So I thought that was really cool. That was very unexpected. So, and of course, everyone remembers the credits from the two-part Enterprise Mirror Universe episodes, which were amazing. So much better than the regular credits for Enterprise in general, I thought.
I was in a time crunch. Both times I watched this episode, I skipped the credits, so I didn't see them.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, I missed that. All right. The biggest yes of all is about Georgiou. I was really happy that we finally got to see Yeo exercise her superb acting skills after weeks of mostly petty one-liners that painted her too one-dimensionally. I was blown away by her portrayal returning to the Mirror Universe, grappling with her realization that she had changed and felt out of place there. I was heartened by her desire to turn things around for the better. I agree, but I think also, she's not just, I mean, yes, she's changed for sure. And her time in the Prime Universe is, has affected her ability to fully function in the Mirror Universe. But not only that, she, I think, remembers what Glass has told her about the Terran Empire fell. And I think that impacted her because she expected the Terran Empire to last forever.
Right.
And finding out that it didn't, I think also caused her some self-reflection and made her realize that she needed to make changes, not only for herself, but in order for her legacy, if you will, to endure. So I think it's more than just, I mean, the lines that she said in there, you know, I need to, the only way to survive is to change or whatever, I think she said. I think that had more to do with just, I mean, in addition to, I should say, not necessarily more, but in addition to her realizing that she was significantly changed, I think it was also that this is not sustainable.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah, it definitely wasn't sustainable. We talked about that at length last week / yesterday.
Yesterday. She's realizing it, too. You know, she has come to the conclusion that I need to do something to make my empire be able to withstand the test of time, so to speak. All right, going on, he says, Martin Green's performance as Mirror Michael was superb as well, but we're used to seeing that high level of acting from her.
Yes, we do. We are normally seeing that. But yeah, she was fantastic in that version of her. You know, because we never really got to see that the first time. Instead, it was, you know, Prime Burnham kind of playing the role of Mirror Burnham. So, you know, she was softer as was said there. But yeah, so I would agree. Comic Geek Kev is our last listener set of yeses. He says, great to see them call back to TOS for the resolution of Georgiou's discovery story. I haven't seen those episodes in years and had forgotten about the Guardians. I fell into the Q trap. I'm glad they went in this direction. Yeah, and I think the whole tapestry and that It's a Wonderful Life kind of thing threw me off as well. And yeah, so that's what I would say about that. The toast.
I never once suspected Q.
I mean, I didn't think it was Q. But I didn't know who it was. I
didn't have any idea who it was for sure.
I just
didn't think it was Q.
I thought maybe it was a different Guardian of Forever, like, or, you know, a Guardian of Yesterday or something like that, a different Guardian. But this was the same Guardian, just, you know, had moved, took the U-Haul and went to a different planet. So The toast at the end was a little sappy, but I loved it. I think it's pretty common for people to see a person's best side when they are no longer around, but I thought most of the comments were pretty realistic for the character. When I watch again, I'll probably pick it apart more, but for now, I thought it was great. Yeah, your comments there are accurate in terms of, I think people don't want to, you know, when someone has died, they don't really want to talk about how much they were a jerk or something like that. Those comments are probably not appropriate at that time, but the comments that were brought up, I think, were in the spirit of the character herself. So I think that they worked. Arium getting some lines out of makeup. Nice to see and hear the actress in her bangs. You said. Yeah. And we got to see actually Arium and Nielsen on the same bridge at the same time.
Nielsen.
What did I say?
Everybody says Nielsen. They say Nielsen.
Okay. That's true. It's sort of more like a Nordic.
There's no E.
Right.
Yeah. There's an I.
N-I-L-S-S-O-N. Yeah.
Nielsen.
Yeah. Love seeing Saru use some of his abilities. Yes. In fact, lifting up. Poor Mirror Culber.
Yeah.
Yes. With his red. We didn't mention that. The fact that the doctors in the Mirror Universe wear red versus white. I thought that was appropriate. And lastly, speaking of Saru, I loved how he became so close to the changed Georgiou. Considering she was eating Kelpians not too long ago, and here she's helping him through the hardest part of his life, it was just cool to see. Makes it pretty clear that it's the Mirrorverse is a nature versus nurture experiment gone very wrong. It would have been cool to see him use his spiky ganglia in the fight. Oh, yeah, that would have. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we didn't get to see that, but yes. So I wonder, I guess that, you know, the other Kelpians that are there, have they also gone through the Vaharai, I guess?
Vaharai.
I will keep saying it wrong.
Okay, I'll probably keep correcting you.
Not intentionally, but Vaharai?
Vaharai.
Vaharai. Okay.
Emphasis on the second syllable. Vaharai.
Vaharai. Anyway. Vaharai. Anyway. All right. Let's go.
Oh, my gosh.
What do you have for yeses, Ruthie?
I have probably not that many. I liked seeing the image on the screen of seeing Michael look through the bowl of fireflies. Like, she turned her head and looked at the fireflies. So she's looking at the fireflies, but the shot was her face through the bowl of fireflies. I thought that was cool. It was a nice visual shot. I really liked the wake at the end of the episode. I thought it was appropriate. And yeah. Also, Arium getting lines and out of makeup with the bangs. I thought that was cool. And I love the frowny face that Captain Killy made at Michael when she was interrogating her. She made that face. Do you know what face I'm talking about?
No, what face are you talking about?
She made a frowny face. It was hilarious. She was like, right before she like punched down on the agonizer button to turn it on.
Oh. Okay.
She made this face like she was mimicking Michael's tantrum.
Yeah.
She made a frowny face and was like, pushed on the button and was all. Anyway, I thought that was funny. I don't know that I had very much else.
Well, most of my yeses have been taken.
Yeah.
And I may have more that I didn't write down. But I can't think of anything right off the top of my head. I guess maybe, I guess I could say Book, since we were talking all about the mirror stuff. Book coming in, you know, making himself useful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I thought that was good. and using some emerald chain technology in on the whole thing with
and him saying there's no food allowed in here.
Yeah.
Showing that he really did read the field manual.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I really liked that. I forgot about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, and the fact that
that whole scene.
First he went to the field manual, and then maybe it's a callback to just the fandom, but then he mentions reading the technical manual. And
technical
of course
technical manual. I know.
Yeah.
And Jet Reno's like, none of that is in the field manual. So I went to the technical manual.
Yeah. And the technical manual that was done for TNG was amazing. One of the books that got damaged back in 2011 when we had mold damage. And that's the same time that I lost the letter that I got from Paramount, you know, and the copy of the check and all that stuff when I sold my story. But anyway, I read that technical manual, I don't know, probably 100 times, that TNG technical manual. So I would love it if they come out with a Discovery technical manual. Like, well, they better, because they got to explain that spore drive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'd get your hopes up on that.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I am curious for this, the next three episodes. Does the Kelpian ship find a dilithium nursery fixing basically the dilithium shortage? I mean, is that what we're going to end up finding going forward? Because that would kind of fix things. But anyway, there are some things that came up in this episode that are going to fit in with my no's and my not good enough. So that said, I do have one more yes, and it is not specific to this episode, but I wanted to include it. So we don't ever post these, but the video of our Zoom recordings that we use. But I switched my background to the image from that I used on the podcast episode from last week, the image of Giorgio standing in front of the Charon in the background, right through her crown. And it was something we mentioned on the podcast, how much we loved it. Well, I have that in the background, and we messed up, or we tried to get myself aligned so that I would fit directly under that crown. And Ruthie took a screen capture of it, and I posted it on the Facebook group, and we got a response from Wes from Minnesota, and I want to share it. He says, His Highness, Imperial Majesty, Father of the Homeland, Overlord of Vulcan, Dominus of Quonos, Regent Andor, Brian Melosh, Augustus Iaponius Centaurius. Well, thank you, Wes. I appreciate that. That was great. That was funny. All right. All right. Now it is time for our no's, so let's get to it. There aren't a lot of no's this week, but there are some. No. Mike from Arizona says, Commander Landry died even faster than the first time. Come on, man. Yeah, she did die fast. And then he just says, that's all for this episode. So I guess that means he has no hold your horses. Have a great week and a Merry Christmas. Well, thanks, Mike from Arizona. Mike? That's not really a no, but I wanted to include it.
Oh, that's funny. All right. Next, we have Wes from Minnesota, who says, why in the heck would you mention Lorca many times in the two episodes only to not have Jason Isaacs appear? Even if it was like a brief shot or a cameo on like a view screen would have been nice. But no, sadly, this was the only no I have this week. I have to agree. That is a huge no for me.
Or even have him on the Ready Room or something. You know,
well, but I don't know about having him on the Ready Room.
Have him on a Zoom call.
Yeah, just have him. Hello.
Have a picture of him or something. You know, I don't know.
Picture. Oh my gosh, that's funny. They should have done something. That was a misstep. They shouldn't have said his name so many times without actually having him here.
Now, I think it's internally consistent that Lorca is gone at this point, though.
I agree.
Because I was thinking about it, and it's like, well, probably Giorgio had sent people out to find him because she knew that Lorca was gone. And, you know, maybe there's a deleted scene or something in, because we know that 3 months had passed. And, you know, maybe Burnham had gone after him. We don't see that or something, but it is internally consistent that he's not there.
Yeah, because at this point in time, he's most likely already in the Prime universe.
Yeah. So,
but at the same time, yeah, I was a little disappointed.
But you could imagine that, say, while Burnham is getting tortured, Giorgio is, you know, sending somebody out to get Lorca, and, you know, he ends up
find him.
Yeah, and he ends up with the brand getting destroyed and that whole transporter accident and all that stuff. So now how we don't see Prime Lorca, you know, maybe Prime Lorca got killed as well. You know, I don't know. We don't see that, but I'm going to kind of...
Prime Lorca got killed.
We think so,
they
yes.
They just thought that he was not killed because Mirror Lorca showed up.
Right. So, yes, it is very disappointing, and it had a play in why it wasn't a higher episode. I deducted more marks from last week than I did from this week, because I had a bigger problem with this week's that I had to give all of my half point deduction to, which I'll get to. And I'm really, really, really surprised that no one else mentioned this one. I like shocked, but I'll take this one. So I think Duggan is a poor man's Lorca, though. I think what they had planned for Jason Isaacs were the scenes with Duggan. So they would have had him in a shuttle or briefly in the brig. But for whatever reason, they couldn't work it out with the schedule, you know? But it sucks, though. I agree. They should have tried to make it work. But, you know, that's...
What are you going to do?
Yeah. All right. That's it for Wes. Next is LT from NC. He says, so many name drops, so little Lorca. Yep. Did the Guardian have a small budget for sets? What's Brian going to say? Did the Guardian have a small budget for sets? Well, I don't know if the Guardian had a small budget for sets, but certain other things had a small budget for sets, but I'm going to defer until it's time for me to talk, to give out my to hint, at least I'm going to hint at what I'm going to talk about, because this is a major problem with this episode structurally. So anyway, did we even see Mirror Culber last time? No, last time in the Mirror Universe we did not see Mirror Culber, but we did see
last time as in season one.
If we're talking about last episode, yes, he was in the background. We did see him in the shuttle bay.
He was in the party scene too.
Right, that's right. Yeah, he was in the party scene and the shuttle bay, but he didn't really get any speaking parts. I don't know if he actually spoke this episode or not. As Mirror Culber, but he certainly was
leered.
Yes. Yes, he was more pronounced. So, all right, that's it for him.
All right. Brian from Colorado says, I was disappointed not to see Lorca show up in any form, despite mentioning him so much. Yep.
Yep.
Sensing a theme here.
Yep. There definitely is.
You're not the only one.
Yeah, I think that's universal. Our final set of listener knows comes from Comic Geek Kev. He says, the loss of the Mirror Bridge crew. I know they aren't the same characters, and they are just characters, but I was enjoying the other versions. Well, we kind of lost all of the mirror people, except for, I believe Tilly was still alive at the end.
Mm-hmm. She was.
There may have been some, I know Owo was still alive too. So, So they didn't all die. Of course, poor Detmer got one right to the head, and Nilsson too.
That wasn't Detmer. Detmer got stabbed by.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Michael. It wasn't to the head. It was, she got stabbed. That's right.
Stabbed.
Yeah.
A little stabby, stabby action.
I did like that scene where she was throwing out the badges. I like that. So.
It was a little too dramatic for me, I guess.
I don't know. I liked it.
Much like the rest of the Mirror Universe.
Another week of backseat burn. It looks like next week they go to the Nebula, so hopefully that's the focus for the last episodes. It doesn't seem like much time to solve the burn and rebuild the Federation, but I guess finding the Federation was the goal. Rebuild in Season 4, maybe? Maybe. Maybe that will be deferred to Season 4, I guess. It could, and we'll have to see. You know, maybe resolving the burn to, you know, both solve and maybe find more dilithium or find a substitute or whatever, or build a bunch of spore drives. I don't know. We'll see. But I would have to think that, and they haven't really spent any time with that. You know, finding, I would think of the 32nd century, they would have an alternative to Stamets at this point. So maybe we will see that. Because to me, building a bunch of ships with spore drives makes
no sense if you only have one Stamets.
Right. Well, exactly. But if you can get a workaround to that, or if maybe the Federation will kind of soften, you know, in the, because of the need, will soften their kind of restriction on genetic manipulation or whatever, and allow tardigrade DNA. I don't know. But I don't know. I tend to think that with the the advanced discovery computer, the sentient computer, either the computer itself or the computer could devise a substitute. So I would think that some way, somehow, they could come up with a substitute that they still have not done yet. So that's what I'm thinking is going to happen. We shall see.
Mm.
And then lastly, I'm not a fan of Killy. I don't know if it's the way she's written or the way the actress plays her, maybe just because she's so different from Tilly, but even the line delivery doesn't work for me. I'll be happy not to see her again. And to you, Comic Geek Kev, I say shame on you. Shame.
I do not say that because I feel the same way about Mira Michael.
Oh, goodness.
Everybody else is like, I love her. And I'm like, I did not.
Well, I love to hate her. You know,
I didn't even like that. I just didn't like it. I didn't care for it.
Well, you don't like bullies.
I don't like bullies. I don't really like that much of the Mira universe.
It makes sense. It makes sense.
So I can understand why you would be put off by Captain Kelly. I thought that she was similar enough in personality, like, if, for example, with the frowny face to, you know, it was kind of, I don't know. It wasn't, I don't know. She didn't bother me as much as Mira Michael did. The crazy eyes and the big, huge black lipstick. I didn't like it.
Hmm.
Anyway, so I feel you. I feel your pain, Comic Geek Kev.
All right, so that's it for our listener nose. What do you have for nose?
I mean, not so much other than that. I don't really care for the Mirror Universe. I do have a main... I don't really know if this is a no or if it's a hold your horses, but it's probably more of a hold your horses than a no specifically. I think I pretty much just have hold your horses.
Well, I'm really surprised that no one mentioned this. Why is Giorgio on the Discovery and not the Charon?
That was my hold your horses.
And where was the Shenzhou? And for that matter, why is everyone on Discovery? This makes no sense to me at all. All the scenes are on Discovery. It has to be budget why they did this, but in the end, it got really distracting. Why would Giorgio stay on Discovery? I mean, what is it that because Stamets is dead, that the Charon, you know, can't operate or something? It makes no sense. And for that matter, why were all the conspirators on the Discovery? It doesn't make sense. You know, there were, like in the original, we see all these, conspirators that are in these agonizers on the Charon. And, you know, yes, we talked about this before. They all get killed here, but they were all on Discovery. I mean, unless she goes out with the Shenzhou and, you know, kills, you know, hunts down and kills all the conspirators, but that's not what we saw. So, like I said, this had to be budget, but the fact that everything was on Discovery feels really, really wrong.
Yeah, I agree. I was just going to include it in my hold your horses. I thought the exact same thing, though. What did I write down? Why didn't the Emperor use the Charon? I mean, when a ship is christened, it's ready for voyage, right?
Yeah.
So why are they still on the Discovery after months?
It makes no sense, you know? So yeah, I was surprised, listeners, that no one else mentioned this. So I am glad.
Well, we did. Fist bump.
Yeah. We got it. We got it. So
that's why we have the podcast. Oh, that's funny.
I don't know. Someone may have mentioned it in the Hold Your Horses, but I don't know. I'm not seeing it. I see something mentioned there, but not.
Well, I mentioned it last week that it was really convenient that they only showed up on Discovery because reasons.
Yeah.
I thought so. It's just kind of a carryover. Like, oh, then they christened the Charon, but they didn't use it.
It just doesn't make sense to me. So, like I said, this had to be budget, but unless they got rid of the sets, like they just destroyed them from the last time, I don't know. It doesn't make sense. Now, next season, not that they would, but supposedly they are building these like virtual sets, so they could do this very easily, but that's not the case here, so. The next thing I didn't get is they are supposedly at this planet that is very close to the Gamma Quadrant. And we know that one of the problems why everyone kind of got so disconnected, in addition to the spore, not the spore drives, but the warp drives not being so available because of the dilithium shortage, the subspace network went down, like it went into disrepair, and subspace, you know, the planets weren't communicating with each other anymore. So that's part of the reason why
subspace relays.
Yeah. That's part of the reason why the Federation kind of eroded, you know, they couldn't communicate. So how is it that Discovery is able to communicate with Vance? And how are they able to communicate with the nebula? Like, where are they in relationship to the nebula? So this I didn't understand either.
I'll tell you.
Okay.
It's because what Book did.
And Book was able to boost the signal enough?
He had
that
device.
Okay.
He had that device. What I find disbelievable is that the Emerald Chain is able to come up with something to cut through subspace, whatever the words he said were. But the Federation didn't.
Yeah.
I mean, I would think that if you're experiencing problems as a nation or an entity or what have you, the biggest thing that you need to fix is communication. Because if you can't communicate, you're nothing.
Yeah.
So I don't understand why that wouldn't be something that they would work on fixing post haste.
I agree.
But the Emerald Chain seemed to have no problem coming up with a workaround.
Yeah.
It's like, this is why you're being beaten. because other people are advancing technology and you're not. I'm like, and that doesn't make any sense to me, because isn't the Federation, like, what are they doing?
They fighting don't have fires. Like
real, they don't, well, okay. They don't have real jobs. All they do is just, they don't. Money is gone in the Federation.
True.
So they don't have jobs. They do what they want. They invent. They're artists. They have hobbies. They pursue their interests, and they're scientists, and they make advancements and
play the
all
cello.
That stuff. Yeah. So, so what are they doing that no one has, you know, all these people, all these, you know, this is basically this society of thinkers and doers, and they're not thinking and doing and trying to like come up with solutions to these problems. I mean, it's been 100 and something years. Mm-hmm. So I have many problems with this whole burn and breakdown of the Federation thing. It seems to me, it seems unlikely.
I agree with that. That's definitely a shortcoming here. And then
I think that they just wrote it that way because they wanted it to be that way. I'm like, I don't really, to me, I want to be like, okay, fine. Come up with a better reason why this broke down rather than just, oh, we ran out of dilithium and no one could come up with a better solution for that. That just seems really unlikely to me.
Yeah.
I don't know.
The last thing I wanted to bring up was Vance waffling.
I had that in my Hold Your Horses too.
Yeah. He waffled. He definitely waffled a lot here at the end. And, you know, so he sends them on the mission, but then when they communicate back, you know, he gets all in a, you know, hissy fit about them using the Emerald Chain technology. And, you know, that was kind of odd. So
mine wasn't necessarily that specifically. It was more along the lines of like, he was being very admiral-like in the previous episodes, but in this episode, suddenly he wants to micromanage.
Exactly.
I'm like, you can't have it both ways. Either you want Saru to be captain and handle his business, or you want him to run to you for every little thing.
Yeah, I didn't understand why he got butthurt over it.
I didn't either. I was like, seriously?
Yeah.
And I also didn't understand the issue with using the Emerald Chain technology. I'm like, how many times has a Federation ship come across something and thought, hey, that's cool, let's integrate it?
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
And I guess that did kind of quiet him down once Book said, well, you know, I've been using this on my ship for 2 years, you know?
Yeah.
But then again, you know, if that's true, why not just network his ship and Discovery together? Like, why did they have to install it on Discovery? You know, I mean,
well, why not? But
yeah,
I mean, that to me just, it leads to other issues. Like, why does he even have this and the Federation doesn't? Just like I said before,
exactly.
I don't understand why they wouldn't, why fixing your subspace relays would not be your first priority.
I agree. Okay. So that is it for our notes. So let's move on to Hold Your Horses.
Hello, this is Captain Tilly. What the hell? What the hell? Hold your horses.
Hopefully, Hold Your Horses will be the last that we talk about the Mirror Universe for this season. I don't want to go back. So
yeah. All right. Wes from Minnesota says, the fight scene in the brig, it was too brief. I loved the deaths and pandemonium that occurred. Captain Killy shooting Mira Nilsson in the head with a phaser. Awesome scene and perfectly choreographed. I could agree with that.
I don't know. I didn't find it that brief, but because it's, I don't know. I don't think it was as long as the one from 2 seasons ago in What's Past is Prologue, but I thought it was long enough. I don't know.
I can see where you're coming from.
Rick from Cleveland is next. He says, my one, hold your horses, Mirror Michael is supposed to be captain of the Shenzhou at that point in the Terran timeline. I did not hear that ship referenced once. Indeed.
Yep.
Yes, that we're in agreement with. Like, the whole thing being all Discovery and...
All Discovery all the time.
Yeah. Like, and that could have easily been fixed just by showing them being on... Like, maybe Killy was captaining the Charon instead of the guy that was captaining Charon, you know, the first time we go there. They could have taken the Charon there. You know, why not? And that would have made more sense from what we're about to hear in a minute. But I don't know.
Yeah. You're not wrong, Rick. It was definitely a problem that everything was all Discovery all the time.
Yep.
All right. Next, we have LT from NC who says, for being an all-knowing, near omniscient thing, the sphere data has a few blind spots.
Yes.
Yeah. My issue with the sphere data is the propensity or likelihood that it could turn into a get out of jail free card a lot. They have set it up that way. And so now every time they don't refer to it or use it, they're going to have to come up with a damn good reason why.
Hey, Sphere Data, where can we find dilithium?
Yeah. I mean, is this going to be the new Siri?
Hopefully it'll work better. Than that and work better
it
than...
It should, but yeah. That's the problem is that you can't present this thing like this and not expect every single time. I mean, like, if I had that kind of, hey, Sphere Data, what stock should I invest in? Hey, Sphere Data, you know, I mean, why would you not ask it everything?
So hey, Google, what stock should I invest in?
Yeah,
sorry, exactly. I didn't understand.
Yeah, that's what we hear today. Sorry, yeah. I didn't understand.
Well,
I'm sorry.
Yeah, we know you're sorry. That was my problem with this whole solution last week. It's a dangerous,
Deus Ex Machina.
Yeah. Well, yes, exactly. It's Deus Ex Machina and it's a dangerous precedent. That's the word I'm looking for. It's a dangerous precedent that they have set for themselves that I wish they had not done. I mean, they sort of set themselves a limit when they said any way that we queried the sphere data, this is the response that we got, sort of implying that you kind of have to ask the right questions, which could be imposed as a limitation, but I don't like it when you have too powerful of an all-knowing thing at your fingertips.
Agreed.
All right. He goes on to say the ISS Disco faster at warp than the Prime Disco. That was an awful short trip they took.
Yeah, because, you know, they mentioned Warp 9, and we know that ships of that period can't go Warp 9, at least that we know, or at least normally can't. But then again, I would think that the Terrans would not exactly be environmentally friendly. I imagine that they would, you know, be very
concerned about.
Yeah, that would be the least of their concerns. I mean, we know that with what they were doing with the spore energy, you know, they were kind of releasing it into making it toxic to the whole, you know, mycelial network. So they don't care. That's the last of their concerns.
Right. Well, my thing is, did you really want to watch them spend all that time in a warp?
No.
It's like anytime people complain about they shouldn't have gotten there that fast. Well, did you want to watch them traveling for months or weeks or days or hours or however long? I'm like, come on. That's boring TV. I don't want to watch people in a car or on a plane forever.
Speaking of forever, I could just see the Mirror Universe people messing up everything by using the Guardian of Forever. Maybe that's how they got so powerful. They started messing with time. I don't know. Who knows?
I don't know. All right, LT goes on to say, the wake, it was just a little too nice for me, since I expected one person to be blunt and honest. Didn't the Emperor hurt someone's feelings enough to get a I'm glad she's gone style comment? I feel like they did sort of say that, but in tactful ways.
Yes, they did.
Like when Michael said, I loved her and I hated her. I mean, that's kind of, if that's not blunt, I don't know what is. Saru, same. He said, her barbs were very cutting. They were always truthful. Something like that. Yeah. I can't remember exactly what he said, but he was also, I mean, I didn't think they were too nice. I thought they were appropriately blunt and honest.
Yeah.
Besides that, I'm not sure how many wakes you've been to, LT. I haven't been to that many, but usually if you don't have something nice to say, you keep your mouth shut. That's true in most cases, but I would think especially true at a funeral.
Or a wedding.
Right. If you don't agree with the sentiments being said, just keep your mouth shut.
Yeah, you'll get holy hell put upon you if you object at a wedding.
Yeah.
I don't know anyone that's ever done that, but I have heard of stories.
Yeah, I've only seen it in TV or movies or whatever.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if someone is thinking it and maybe later it gets said or something. But I mean, I don't know. I guess I just didn't think it was that terrible. So anyway. All right. Next, he says, and about the wake, are we going to get an answer why Adira's invisible boyfriend isn't talking to them? It's getting awkward.
Somebody didn't watch the Ready Room.
I know, I was going to say, stay tuned. Finally, we're getting closer to the end, so I'm still on the hoping they stick the landing before we run off the tarmac bandwagon.
Yep, runway. I'm definitely on the running out of runway bandwagon at this point.
Yep. I agree.
Okay, next is Brian from Colorado. He says, Reno and Stamets breaking the third wall by acknowledging how she's been absent. It was funny, but really took me out of the story. I had no problem with it.
Me neither.
Similarly, Carl mentioned the Prime Universe. That's something we say in the real world, but it wouldn't be something the characters would say in the show. Well, they did say it in the show last week.
Yeah.
And I don't have a problem with them.
In fact, she said, in my universe, we're the Prime.
Yeah.
And then to which Saru replied, as it should be.
And I don't have a problem with the idea that in all of these messed up, you know, timey-wimey universes, that there is a Prime Universe, the universe that is supposed to be. I don't have a problem with that, really.
Yeah. All right, next we have Comic Geek Kev, who says, not good enough for horses. So, Giorgio is dead in the Mirror Universe? If there's a Section 31 show, I wonder if we'll see that universe again and what that means for them. I mean, she was basically dead there anyway, but that was in the future, right? The future of those particular events, I mean. Lorca is presumably still alive in that Mirrorverse, isn't he? But Mirror Lorca or Prime Lorca? I love these types of stories, but sometimes I just can't keep them straight. So I just go along for the ride and enjoy it. But basically, if she died sooner than when Prime Burnham took her, what does that do to the Mirrorverse?
Well,
my
take on it was that a parallel or, you know, alternate timeline Mirror Universe spawned off with this, or like you said, pocket universe. I don't know, but
I think it's a pocket universe.
See, my take on it was that this created a parallel timeline or whatever, or alternate timeline similar to the Kelvin timeline. So this is the, you know, Guardian timeline or something. I don't know, but
I think that she experienced the things as in, to me, it's more like It's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah.
It's not really, I mean, when he wakes up, though he had those experiences, but it didn't really happen. That's kind of how I feel. And like, she had those experiences, but they didn't really happen.
Yeah.
So it didn't affect season one at all, because Prime Lorca is probably dead. Mirror Lorca got sent to Prime Universe with the transporter accident with the Baron. And so everything played out as it would have. I think that she just, it's one of those things that everything, like, oh my gosh, time is so confusing. Time happened the way it was supposed to happen. So if something happened, then it happened. If it didn't happen, then it was never meant to happen. That's how I feel.
Alrighty then.
So, in other words, if you went back in time and you did kill Hitler, then Hitler's dead. If you didn't kill Hitler, then he was never dead, no matter if you tried to go back in time and kill him.
Sure.
That's how I feel about time travel, I think. I don't know. It's very timey-wimey and confusing.
Yeah, and my take on it is that I already said, I think we will see the Mirror Universe play in the Section 31 show, but she won't go back. It'll be characters coming from there, you know?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. So
that would be interesting.
All right. So that's it for listener. Hold your horses. Do you have any?
We talked about them in your nose.
Okay. All right. So this is, we talked about the Discovery computer, and my take on it is this. I kind of hinted at, hey, Discovery computer, find us dilithium. But hey, Discovery computer, why not determine the cause of the burn? Like, why is the Discovery computer not able to determine that? You would think that it could.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, this goes back to the solve all my problems trope.
Yes. And my final thing is, Georgia's not dead, so why do they say she's deceased?
For all general intents and purposes, she's not around for them anymore. Well, she is dead. She went back in time. She's dead.
But she's
not. She died a long time ago.
She's not dead, though. I mean,
she is dead. She died a long time ago for their
timeline. Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah, sure. I guess that's one way you can interpret it. Anyway, that's it. We already uncovered pretty much everything I had. So let's move on to our listener feedback and open hailing frequencies. Okay, so we've got two voicemails this week. One is from Jeff X-Force 11.
Hello, Star Trek fans. It's Jeff X-Force 11 leaving my feedback about Terra Firma Part 2. I really liked the blue upside down feel to the opening credits. It really reminded me and took me back to the Fringe days, where the credits would be different colors based on which universe we were going to be in. And so I enjoyed that. I loved the look into the Mirror Universe with Philippa and seeing how she had changed and for the better. I really liked to get to see how that affected her, and just getting to see, like last week, more of our bridge crew, even if it was the Mirror Universe versions of them. I liked the insight that we got and the work that we got of our side of Discovery working to look into the Kelpian ship message and how Book gave them the tools that they needed and he was on top of things. I love the tribute to Philippa at the end and how this is going to take us into the Section 31 series with her. So just overall, a very good episode, and I'm looking forward to seeing what's next. All right, those are my thoughts. X-Force 11 is out.
Well, thank you so much, Jeff X-Force 11, for your voicemail yet again. And maybe they should have played the music backwards too.
No.
I'm kidding, of course. But yeah, I mentioned that earlier, so it was cool.
Yeah, I, when I, okay, so as I previously mentioned, I skipped the credits, so I did not see them. But when people were talking about it, Fringe was exactly what I thought of, too.
Anyway, you'll appreciate it once you do. What is it about Fringe that made you think of that?
They had, have you seen Fringe at all?
Yes.
So when they go into the other universe in Fringe.
Okay.
The Fringe credits are different.
Okay. Right.
So that's what I thought of.
Gotcha.
And also when they went back to 1980 something, the very first time I watched that episode, they went back to 1980, whatever, when Walter was first doing the stuff that he was doing or whatever. They were super blocky. And at first I thought, man, is there something wrong? What's going on here? Then I realized, oh, they're doing 1980s graphics.
Yeah, Fear of the Walking Dead did something similar. There's a character on there that's a videographer, and we see a couple of times that the story credits turn into, you know, what looks like scratchy VHS tape, you know, which was pretty cool. So, in fact, they did a couple of episodes that were that looked like they were recorded on VHS tape. So that was kind of cool, slash a lot of people got really annoyed by it. I was in the cool category, but some people hated it. Anyway, that's it for his voicemail. Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks, Jeff.
Let's move on to the next voicemail, and that is, of course, from Fred.
Hello, Brian and Ruthie, and all listeners to Talk True Media. This is Fred from the Netherlands with some feedback for Star Trek Discovery Season 3, Episode 10. Whoa, quite a heavy episode. I don't know if I like this alternative universe, the mirror universe, so much. It was really dark and awful in the beginning, and especially seeing Sonequa Martin-Green, although she did it very good, this role, so dark, so angry, so, well, I can imagine that the actors like it to get the worst out of yourself and play these roles, but I found it a bit too dark. Marvelous at the end was actually the interaction between Michael and Georgiou and this guy with the bowler. In the previous episode, I had a lot of difficulties with this guy, this Carl, but here it was much better. And of course, we get here the start, possibly, of a Georgiou own series here, Section 31 series, whatever, wherever she will be going. So that's a nice setup for that and getting rid more or less of Georgiou here. I really wondered that when season 2 ended, like, how do we get a Section 31 Georgiou series when she is going to the future 930 years? But of course, this is the way that they can make that possible. Okay, I just saw the episode, so not very many other impressions so far. I really have to watch it a second time. That's all for me. Greetings. All the best. Fred from the Netherlands.
Thanks, Fred.
Yes, thanks, Fred. And you will have more time for the rest of the season to get in your feedback. So that should work out quite well for you. Tell your European friends to get their feedback in. Gosh darn it.
That's right. Since we know that you know everyone else who listens to the show who lives in Europe. You guys all know each other, right?
We are kidding, of course. But anyway, to correct you, the actors love playing those dark versions of those characters. I mean, they talk about it. They talked about it last week. Of course, Giorgio talks about it this week on The Ready Room. They absolutely love playing those characters. So, and I understand why. It's an interesting role to play. It's the same reason why, say, like on Next Gen, when Brent Spiner got to play Holodeck Data, you know, as gunslinging Data and or Lore. Yeah, that's a better example. He used to love doing that and
it's just something out of the ordinary.
Yeah. And the Deep Space Nine characters. And of course, Enterprise, when they did its two-part Mirror Universe episodes there, which in my opinion, were two of the best episodes of Enterprise. They love doing it that as well. So it's just, you know, one of those things. It's nice to play different version of yourself, but I think it's also interesting to play evil. So, you know, that's my take. I wanted to say, I got my comments out of order here, and I think it's out of order how you said it, but I thought what they were going to do was, and clearly this wasn't possible once they started showing Giorgio deteriorating in their condition, but originally I thought that they were going to reestablish the Section 31 in the 32nd century. Like, we'd have the Kovich there, and he would be part of Section 31, you know, and Giorgio, like, it would basically be a show where Giorgio's taking, like, basically the captain to the to Kovich's admiral, you know, and that would kind of be the show. But I guess that's not it. I guess she's going back to 23rd century, and I guess that's going to be good as well, because that'll have Ash Tyler back. So I think it works out. I think it was the question that we have to ask is, why did they send her to the 32nd century in the first place?
Yeah.
Was it a question of they weren't ready on the, like, maybe Michelle Yeoh wasn't ready to play that character? But again, that doesn't make sense. I mean, maybe she was ready as she was available to play for season 3, but she wouldn't be available for Section 31 after that. And of course, this was all before COVID and, you know, all that. But I don't know. I'm still expecting them to start to have an announcement to say what's going on with that series, but we haven't heard it yet. So I don't know. I just don't know.
I don't know.
Maybe early this week. Maybe by the time you hear this, they will have announced something about it. So who knows? And I thought the Carl Burnham Giorgio interaction was really cool. The part that I don't understand is and it was throwing me off last week, in the original The City on the Edge of Forever, we do not see the Guardian of Forever be a character like he is in this version of him. So I don't know how he became a character. I mean, you know, 900 some odd years has passed, so maybe it's partially that. But otherwise, I don't know.
Maybe he just didn't show himself in that episode. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, he was a bit riddly, but other than that, he wasn't like Mr. Pun like he was in, you know, A Clown Opened the Door. It was a nice jester, you know.
It was adorable.
Yeah, it was adorable.
That was funny.
What do you call a nice portal or a beautiful portal or whatever? It's adorable. So anyway, that's it for my reaction to that. Do you have anything else you want to add?
No.
Hi, this is Brian, and I just want to leave a brief note. We did get a third voicemail, Trey from Pittsburgh. I'm sorry, Trey, but for some reason, your voicemail didn't get to us until after we were recorded, even though we saw from the timestamp that it had been basically sent Friday night. We did not have it until after we recorded. So I don't know what happened, but for some reason, the email was delayed in getting to us. So we will play your email next week when we record episode 58. Well, technically, it's tomorrow. Because I'm recording this on Christmas Day. I'm working on the episode Christmas Day. We want to get it out to you today. So anyway, I just wanted to leave that note. Sorry, Trey, but your voicemail will be played first thing in episode 58. So just want to let you know we got it. And don't forget, Our deadline is Saturday, 6 a.m. Eastern, 5 a.m. Central, 3 a.m. Pacific, and 1100 UTC time. So, and remember, you know, if you're a little bit past that, just get it in anyway. If we're still recording, we'll try to get it in if we see it come in. And if it is later than that, we'll do what we always do and play it the following week. So anyway, just wanted to leave that note and talk to you soon. Let's move on. Jim from SoCal. I guess I'll take this one. OMG, what an episode. We all knew it was coming, but to hear those words, I am the guardian of forever, I just couldn't leave it alone there. I had to give it on there. So it didn't feel right when it was just me saying that. It still gave me the chills, he says. The episode was great in the Mirror Universe, but the story with the Discovery seemed secondary. I agree with that. But the end scene toasting Philippa goodbye was fun and yet heartwarming. Disappointing, no Lorca, but at least Captain Killy was kick-ass. That sentence kicked my ass, which you won't hear, listeners, but I had trouble saying that for some reason. Next.
All right. Rick from Cleveland says, while I was lukewarm in the way the Burn plot was creeping along last week, they can now focus on it and hopefully finish out the season with some more great reveals. I'm excited now to see where the rest of the season could go. Between this and the awesomeness of the Mandalorian season finale, this week was nerd heaven. Agreed, Rick. It was definitely nerd heaven. If anyone hasn't seen City on the Edge of Forever or just not seen it in a while, it's a great episode and one of the TOS episodes that stands the test of time. Totally worth your time.
I would agree with that. And we will not talk about Mandalorian because...
But it was so good.
Well, I haven't seen it. I intentionally haven't seen it yet.
That's all I'll say.
Yeah. So don't spoil it for me, listeners. I haven't seen it because my focus has been Discovery and nothing but Discovery. I will go and watch Mandalorian after Discovery is done because it took me long enough to get this last episode out. You don't need me to get distracted watching The Mandalorian now, do you? That's all I'll say. So, Brian from Colorado is next. He says, the Guardian said Giorgio is going back to a time before the two universes split. I interpret this to be the time of first contact or earlier. Why do you interpret this? I interpret it to a point where her atoms won't shatter apart. That's what I think.
Yeah, I think that's an incorrect interpretation.
Yeah. He says maybe the Section 31 show will be about the founding of that agency by Giorgio before there's even yet a united Earth government. No, I think you're wrong about this, Brian. I hate to say this, but I think she's going to go back to the 2250s. I mean, that's... I think it's pretty clear. She's going back, you know, to the 2250s, maybe, you know, 2258.
I think, honestly, I think she'll get plopped down right where she left.
Yeah, that's my take as well. Like I said, I would think that she will be interviewed just like we see Spock, Pike, number one, and Ash Tyler. Being interviewed. I think she will be interviewed. We'll see those scenes in the first episode, or at least the ramifications of them. I don't know. And I see her and Tyler working on Section 31, probably subverting it so that it goes underground. Because we know that by the 24th century, it is just kind of a whisper. It's, you know, they're very much in the background, and it's only in Deep Space Nine do we finally find out that there is a Section 31. So
right, it's still Black Badge Division,
right?
In the time that she left, she was in the Black Badge before. It was Black right. Badge Division, whatever. They had the special comm badges and all that stuff. So yeah, I think she's going back. They keep calling it the Section 31 show, but it's going to be about the Black Badge Division, I think.
It's like I've said, I envision it to be like Mission Impossible kind of thing. Mission Impossible for the...
your mission, should you choose to accept
it. Which is kind of funny because that has the Mission Impossible...
Impossible Mission Force
has such a tie to Star Trek, it's not even funny. Because, for example, let's see, J.J. Abrams directed some of the Mission Impossible ones. Simon Pegg was in them. Leonard Nimoy was in the original TV show. It's just there's a big tie to that. So I could totally see a Mission Impossible Star Trek type of show. And for that matter, I could see them doing a Mission Impossible TV show, especially now with Mission Impossible, the movies being like now part of Viacom CBS. So I wouldn't be surprised if they have that in the works, but I don't know. Then again, the Tom Cruise movies are still going pretty strong, I think.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of Tom Cruise, my parents wanted to watch Top Gun last night and had to break it to them that it hasn't come out yet.
Beautiful. Oh.
I was like, sorry, no one has seen that.
Yep. Okay, we got one more.
Finally, we have Comic Geek Kev, who says, first, I just want to say how interesting it is to hear the podcast for last week's episode after seeing this week's episode.
Sorry.
Good. I'm glad we could help you out there. Oh, my goodness. I loved hearing your prediction against what we know that's happened. I did enjoy the episode, but I agree that maybe this part of the story should have been done earlier. The burn has definitely been taking a back seat. But since it gave us a few more episodes with Giorgio, I can give that a pass. Agreed.
To that, I have to say, just to the whole thing about hearing the podcast after watching this week's episode, it was funny because, I usually go back and I listen to it after I release it. And we did touch on, or suppose that, like, for example, Carl is the Guardian Forever, but we weren't sure about it. So, and the whole thing about, like, what is this mirror universe, and trying to understand it, what it ended up being, we did cover that, but we weren't sure about it. So we didn't plant our flag. And because, there have been times, many times where I go, I was right. But I was so uncertain that I couldn't do that this time, but at least I felt good that it was something that, we touched on. But there was one thing I know, I can't remember specifically which thing, but there was one thing that I came up with where I said, I don't think it's this, but it ended up turning being this. So, yeah.
I don't know. I can't remember.
I think maybe it was something about, it might have been something about the Guardian. I think, like, the whole thing about it being a door and that the Guardian called himself Carl was something that I was having trouble processing because it was very different than what we saw originally. And I don't know why there was a difference there, but. I'm okay with it, I guess. It's not the worst thing, but still, I don't know why it's different. The fact that he has a personality and the door was the way it was. But then again, eventually we see the actual door. And this is something we didn't mention. Burton's like, what do you mean, who are you? Had no idea who the Guardian Forever was. And that's, of course, because Kirk and Spock encounter it, several years after Burnham and, the Discovery Burnham left.
Company left. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's worth saying. Anyway,
Yeah, my dad asked me if we're going to see a young Captain Kirk in the episode of
Strange New Worlds.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, I don't know.
There is the possibility of that, and there is also the possibility of Kirk being in the Section 31 show. And I wouldn't be surprised if we see Kirk in both shows, like in some capacity. But it just all depends on how they decide to use that character. But I wouldn't be surprised at all if we see Kirk show up.
I don't know. I had to explain a lot of things to my dad on Monday night. He wanted me to tell him the whole plot of Discovery and to tell him, explain other things to him, like the Kelvin universe and all this kind of stuff. And I was like, oh.
Has he watched Discovery?
Nope.
Well, then tell him to shut up and watch it.
Yeah, okay. I'll get right on that.
I'm kidding, Ruthie's dad. Very much kidding. Sorry. Sorry to talk to you that way, sir.
He has no idea. He's not going to watch this. He's not going to listen to the podcast. I'm just not going to tell my dad to shut up and watch the episode.
Someone could tell him.
Someone could tell him. That's right. Listeners, if you know my dad, what Brian said.
Ruthie's co-host was mean. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. That's funny. No, he's not going to listen. But
all right,
I'm not going to tell my dad. Shut up and watch the show. I'll tell you why. I've told him that before. He still hasn't. So it's not like it would help. I mean, I didn't say shut up and watch the show. I said, you should watch it. And he didn't. So anyway. Yeah. All right. Comic Geek Kev goes on to say, at the same time, now that she is gone, it should open up more screen time for other issues. I'm hoping the last three episodes are Osira, Burn, Federation, Burn, Book, Burn, Gray, and Burn. All right, then. Yeah, I know, right? Is that the order that you want things? Even though I don't think the outcome with Giorgio was really a surprise, I think they handled it pretty well. Yeah, I agree with you. I'm irritated that they haven't spent more time on the Burn, but at the same time, it did mean more episodes with Giorgio. So, yeah.
I agree. All right. Well, that's it for our listener feedback. Do you have any other notes?
I think I do have a couple of things. I liked that Giorgio actually said/acknowledged, I guess, that death isn't necessarily the scariest thing that can happen to a person. I still don't understand why no one else thinks this, like why they see not killing as a weakness. That's one of the reasons why I guess I just don't understand the mirror universe, because I'm like, I don't understand why you don't see that torture is worse than death. Why death would be mercy and a mercy killing rather than like after you torture someone, killing them is mercy. So if you're torturing them instead of killing them, you're prolonging their, I mean, yes, you're prolonging their existence, but you're also prolonging their torment. I don't know. I just, again, it goes back to the whole, I don't understand this mirror universe thing. And so I was glad that Giorgio figured it out, but I didn't understand why she had to explain it to the rest of them. Why do they need to be told that simply killing isn't stronger than torture? Anyway.
Yeah. Anything else?
Yeah, if Michael had seen her own face, then she would have known that there was no way that anyone would believe that she had changed, because she didn't really look very contrite.
Yeah, I think that Giorgio saw what she wanted to see.
What do you mean?
She wanted to believe that Burnham changed, and so she saw it, she changed, but in actuality, she didn't.
I don't think she did.
What do you mean?
I don't think that she believed that she had changed.
You don't?
She, in fact, said as much.
Okay.
Burnham said, you shouldn't have trusted me. And she said, I didn't.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And thinking about what you're saying, I guess I have to concur with that. I don't have this written down, but it's worth saying and I'll say it in relationship to what you're saying now, I guess, and Carl mentions this too, she had to try to change things, that she had to try to see if she could make the universe a better, make the mirror universe a better place. And essentially she failed, but you know, that's just one of those things, I guess, but she had to try. And the fact that she tried is, I guess, made, like he talked about, that she had to be weighed, right?
Yeah.
So, the fact that she tried was enough to convince Carl that she had changed enough that she was worthy of saving, I guess. Like, I guess he could have said, well, you know, you're not worthy or something. I don't know.
I don't really understand what that has to do with her not trusting Michael.
I guess it doesn't. So let's move on.
All right, then. I don't have anything else to say.
I don't have anything else. So let's move on to our shipwide announcements. This week's Ready Room featured an interview with Michelle Yeoh, as you would expect, and a feature on the fight sequences with stunt coordinator Chris McGuire and various actors talking about those scenes. Now, it wasn't just focusing on this week. It showed the fight scenes from last week, as well as some of the fight scenes from earlier on in the season. So, and Chris McGuire is like the stunt guy, stunt coordinator guy. For those of you that used to watch Star Trek back in the day, Dennis Danger Madelone, I guess he kind of had the same position there, but Dennis Madelone was the stunt coordinator guy for years and years and years on the various Star Trek Berman era. So I think he performs a similar role. I don't think he is performing that role on Picard, but I'm not sure who is. But anyway, and of course we get a sneak peek next week's episode. But the interview with Michelle Yeoh was a really good one, and like we had hinted at before, it indicates that Michelle Yeoh / Philippa Georgiou is not going away. So we kind of knew this already. So anyway, now for news, and thanks to Wes Huntington for collecting these stories for us. Star Trek novelist Dave Galanter, who I know his last novel was the Discovery novel, Dead Endless, which was a Stamets novel. Anyway, his wife announced that he passed away, and he had recently mentioned, I know, that he had cancer. So he lost his bout with cancer, unfortunately. And, you know, I think it looks like his last tweet prior to that was on November 7th. So, but he retweeted a couple of times, but yeah, so respects to his family, and sorry to hear that. Tiny Lister, who was known, he only played once in the Star Trek universe, but he was an actor, and he was most known to play Klang in the Star Trek Enterprise pilot Broken Bow, the first Klingon that Earth comes across. It was his only Trek appearance, but he was also an actor and a comic. And I guess his most notable work included the film Friday with, of course, with Ice Cube. There was no official cause of death, but apparently he had been suffering from COVID-19. So I assume that it has something to do with that. A new book has come out, The Art of Star Trek Discovery. Actually, it had come out November 10th, so this isn't new, but by Paula M. Block and Terry J. Erdman, who I know have been longtime co-authors of numerous books, and they had done Star Trek, the original series 365, Star Trek 101, and Star Trek Deep Space Nine Companion. So Paula is also a co-editor of the Pocketbook's popular Strange New Worlds series. So I don't know that there is one, but I guess there is. Anyway, they've done quite a bit, but apparently this book is quite beautiful from what I've heard. Chris Pine is hoping for another Kelvin Universe film. He said recently, while promoting Wonder Woman 1984, that I know is coming out on December 25th, Christmas Day, later this week, at least at the time that we're recording it. He says he hasn't gotten any script. He does think that the Quentin Tarantino one could be interesting. He's tied to more projects of Paramount. For example, he is tapped to do the remake of The Saint, and he's going to star in a film adaptation of Dungeons and Dragons. Interesting. And finally, we can say that Lower Decks will be seeing an international release. Amazon Prime Video has picked up the international streaming rights. All 10 episodes of the first season will be available on January 22nd, 2021. So about a month away. And according to the StarTrek.com post, it mentions Australia, New Zealand, Europe, including the UK, Japan, India, and more. So I don't know what the "and more" is. Like, you know, Latin America, South America, for example, aren't mentioned there. So I don't know if those regions will be getting it. I assume they will, but they're not specifically mentioned. That's it for news. On to ratings of, and I saw conflicting information about this. Someone who watches it, I think LT does, can let us know. As far as I knew, the episode that was shown Thursday night was season one, episode 11, The Wolf Inside, which of course is the second Mirror Universe episode. But I saw conflicting information somewhere that the episode that was shown was season one, episode 10, which is Despite Yourself. So the previous episode. So I don't know which one was actually shown. So anyway, ratings are in for that, and it got a 0.2 in the 18 to 49 with 1.730 million viewers. That is up from last week's 0.2 in the 18 to 49 with 1.589 million viewers. So it's up at least in the total number of viewers. And if you're just curious about that, like how it's doing compared to other things, it's lower. I mean, let's face it. But then again, you know, it's showing stuff from 3 years ago. So probably if you're a Star Trek fan, you've already seen it. So it's, you know, it's there. It's playing. It's better than the CW ratings. At least you could say that. As far as the Parrot analytics, unfortunately, the numbers are down. Not sure why this is, but the Parrots had Star Trek Discovery down two notches from number 7 to number 9 this week. And it didn't just go down in rankings, but in average demand, it also went down to 34.8 times the average show. Now, this still puts them in exceptional category, but there's like four things that we see on their Star Trek Discovery still is in the exceptional category. But most of the traffic these days is on The Mandalorian. It is way far and above what everyone is talking about at 125.3 times the average show. So I am not talking about it because I haven't seen it yet. I've seen season one, but I will wait and watch season two after Discovery is done. All right, that's it for news. So Ruthie, why don't you tell us how to submit feedback.
Okay, to submit your theories and feedback, go to talkthroughmedia.com/feedback, where you can submit text or audio. You can leave us a voicemail by calling 216-232-6146. You can email us at StarTrekDiscovery@talkthroughmedia.com, or you can post in our designated episode thread in our Facebook group, which is facebook.com/groups/StarTrekTTMpodcasts. And as we have previously stated, the holidays are coming up. So since next Friday is Christmas, the deadline for Discovery Season 3, Episode 11 will be extended to Saturday, December 26th, 2020 at 6 a.m. Eastern, 5 a.m. Central, 1100 UTC. And you can expect that for future episodes as well.
Our Twitter is StarTrekTTM, as is our Instagram. And best way you can support us is to share our posts and like them, of course, on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. You can go to facebook.com/talkthroughmedia, and that is where we will first post the episodes on Facebook, and there you can share them and like and whatever, and you can also write a review. Subscribe to us in Apple Podcasts or the podcast client of your choice. On the blog post, there is a little link that will take you to a page that will have where you can write a review for Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, CastBox, and Podchaser. So it's all in one place. So another way you can help support us is through Patreon. We would like to thank our Patreon supporters, Clint McCollum, Lawrence Todd, James Robbins, Fred Petrie, Kyle McAdams, Kim Vogley, Brian Shiro, Christoph Lechleitner, Lee Radke, Aaron Mays, Michael Carrier, Stephen Chambers, Kevin Lyle, Jeff Gentry, and Jeff Bayako. And remember that all of our new episodes are first on YouTube. So remember to subscribe and search for Talk Through Media on YouTube and find our channel. And smash that subscribe button and click the bell to get notified when we have new videos. Because when the podcast goes out, it will be available on YouTube first. Everything Talk Through Media does can be found on the Talk Through Media all-inclusive feed. So in addition to the Star Trek Discovery podcast, which of course has Picard and Lower Decks on it, it also contains the Rebinged DS9 podcast, The Walking Dead Talk Through, which is now on hiatus for a while until The Walking Dead comes back. And Let's Talk Through. All right. Our next episode of the Star Trek Discovery podcast is Season 3, Episode 11, titled Sukal. We originally thought that the episode was titled The Citadel, but it turns out that it's actually titled Sukal. It is written by co-executive producer Anne Coffell Saunders, and we don't know who has directed it or what the description is, but we did get a sneak peek on the Ready Room, and it is immediately after the last scenes on this week's episode, so they're still in the wake, and we see Gray reappear. So they're... It's a scene with Stamets and Adira, and Gray reappears. So whoever mentioned that earlier about seeing Gray again, I think that was Kamiki Kev, you're going to get your wish because Gray will be in this coming episode.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure, as it has been for the past few times that they've shown scenes in the Ready Room, it's the cold open again. Pretty sure.
Yeah, I agree. So until next time, I'm Brian.
And I'm Ruthie.
Peace and long life.
Live long and prosper.